We're back here on KBUT's Community Matters. Thank you for joining us this evening. Our guest is Melanie Armstrong, a professor at Western Colorado University in Gunnison, and also the lead on a study on winter backcountry use in the Crested Butte area. And joining us now to add to the conversation are two guys that spend a lot of time in all of those drainages that we've been talking about. Ian Havlick and Zach Guy of the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. Guys, we're so happy to have you with us again this week.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
Absolutely.
Yeah, psyched to be here.
So what are your thoughts on the results of this study? Were you surprised to find out that over the past couple of years, you know, winter usage has declined? Were you surprised by some of the other numbers? And we'll start off with Zach. Why don't you go ahead and answer that first?
That's a curveball question because I've actually been out of the valley for the last 3 years.
Okay.
So can I turn that one over to Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fine.
Yeah, no, I was hoping you'd do that, Christopher. No, I was actually quite surprised when I heard that or saw that headline. And it is really helpful to hear Melanie kind of break it all down and dissect it and talk briefly about our own memories and fallibilities. So I'll take her word for it. Sounds like their protocol is really good and analyzing the photos and really interesting stuff. But yeah, anecdotally, I feel like it's boomed since I've been here over the last 8 years, especially the hybrid users, skiers and riders using snowmobiles to access deeper parts of the backcountry.
Well, and Chris Rourke sort of brought up possibly an interesting, answer to that, in that maybe folks are congregating in specific areas more often. In certain areas, we know that, you know, Kebler Pass has definitely grown in popularity, but, maybe folks are just going to certain areas more frequently.
And the other thing, especially that we might see this year, is increased numbers of cars at trailheads may not necessarily mean increased use, in those particular drainages. You know, it may not be three people per car. It may be one, everyone's driving separately. So I think there are definitely some caveats to our own impressions that we see out there when we're skiing and riding. I think in as a whole, our backcountry is still quite empty, but I think there are particular areas that are attracting the bulk of skiers and riders in our drainages across the county.
Sure. And so we do have a submitted question from a listener here that's curious to know from Melanie, what are the busiest days and have those days increased at all? So maybe everyone's just coming on the same weekend. Can you tell us something about that?
I could tell you a little about that, and I will put a plug in for, now that we have 3 years of data this year, we're taking on some more robust statistical analysis of these data in order to really get down into some of those fine-grained details. So hopefully more to come on that soon. But a couple of things that we have been looking at, let me pull up a current chart here, looking bearing in mind that motorized numbers are driven by Kebler, that we see this heavy use from the 21st of December to the 3rd of January. And so thinking about people coming from out of the valley, seeking a recreational experience, perhaps a multifaceted recreational experience, including days at the resort, days renting a snowmobile and touring in the backcountry. So we can see how much that is driven in that holiday period of late December into early January. Non-motorized, on the other hand, is highest in February. And with the exception of Brush Creek, which actually is higher in March than in February. And so thinking about perhaps the non-motorized user as capturing a different type of user, a different type of experience, maybe deliberately seeking out backcountry use in a time of year that has longer daylight hours, has perhaps better snow quality. And then, of course, we have to look towards avalanche season, particularly in the springtime, and how that might impact hybrid use and people who are seeking that backcountry skiing terrain that would be so heavily impacted by snowmobile. I was looking really hard in the data last year to see if single-use holiday weekends had an impact, and I couldn't ever find it. I couldn't find any indication that President's Day weekend had a boom. There are booms. Those typically tend to be organized events. So the Grand Traverse is obviously going to give us a boom in our data, fat bike races, things like that.
Well, that's interesting. You would think that really those holidays would stand out as big booms.
Yeah, hey, I've been surprised by that.
Go ahead, Ian.
Sorry to interrupt there. Hey, I have a question for you regarding that Kebler data. Just curious if you've gotten in touch with any of the operating outfitters that use that corridor and if some of those number spikes can be attributed to that or if it even matters if you know a snowmobile is a snowmobile and that's all that matters or you know a snowcat's a snowcat or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and an interesting thing that we can actually tease out from the data themselves because they are images we can often see. We can definitely see an organized group. A group of riders all show up on the same snowmobile taking pictures or their photos are captured successively. It's pretty easy to pull those out of the data if we wanted to go back and really dive into that as well. But I have two, maybe three really great ambitions for our statistical analysis. One is to really start to overlap this with the snow and avalanche data. So we, Lily and Catherine and Maddie, who are working on the project right now, are pulling those data from the Avalanche Center, from weather reports, and entering them into the statistical analysis in order to understand how those are impacting the fine-grained numbers. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the outcomes of that are. The other data set that this is my challenge to my MEM students out there who are taking this on in their spring statistics course to think about what other data could be correlated. I think rental numbers is a great one. Looking at resort numbers, are busy days at the resort, slow days in the backcountry or vice versa. Looking at overall tourism or room capacity numbers to start to understand maybe some local use versus outside visitor use that could maybe be teased out with some attention to overall visitation trends in the valley. So I think there are data out there that can help us to understand those and will yield some interesting results as we dive deeper into this 3-year comparison.
And Melanie, I just wanted to jump in here that we have a listener submitted question that brings up the question of specifically in the Kebler area, if you're distinguishing folks that are the destination, this listener is concerned about how many people are headed towards Red Lady, skinning up Red Lady in the Kebler drainage area. Are you looking to expand that? Of course, you can't put a camera at the top of every peak, but are you looking for ways to, determine destinations for these folks?
Absolutely. If we were to add one more camera to the study, which of course has implications in things like collecting numbers year to year, I think that access point to Red Lady would be the first place to look. I think that would be an interesting one to capture, particularly because these numbers are so heavily driven by Kebler overall. There might be some other interesting places to get an eye on. Obviously, we haven't done anything down valley, looking at Mill Creek or Hartman Rocks, places that other people recreate as well. So it is certainly a limited picture, driven a little bit by management objectives in anticipation of future winter travel planning in the area. We would expect that these drainages that were part of the original Gang of Nine decision would be the first place to start in terms of planning recreation. We had another MEM student last year who did a really interesting citizen science plan looking at ways to get some more fine grain detail about where people recreate in the once they leave the trailhead. Are they sticking to the trails? Are they heading off to explore on their own? How far are motorized users going into the backcountry? And that would be done with a combination of GPS tracking, people using apps on their phone in order to start to understand where they're headed and what they're doing once they're in the backcountry. So a future project out there for another MEM student, or perhaps in partnership with our stakeholders or the agency in town, would be to launch that program in order to understand what happens once people leave the trailhead.
Sure.
So I have a question for the guys, because they're being really quiet. Something we've talked about on the show is the, you know, the expected explosion of the season of backcountry skiers as a direct result of the pandemic and, you know, ski resort policies around reservations. We've got snow now. Are you seeing the crowds arrive?
You know what? I'll take this one. I haven't seen huge numbers yet. I still think we're kind of on the low end of snowpack as far as winter backcountry users are concerned. It's not quite deep enough to go snowmobiling without hitting rocks. And you know, avalanche conditions have been pretty sporty over the weekend, and there's still not that much snow yet. So I would expect those numbers will start peaking once we start to see a rush from the front range to come to the backcountry. I don't think the conditions are there yet. Obviously, with the spiking COVID numbers and stuff, I think travel is also limited around the state right now. So that's probably reducing, you know, our backcountry usage for sure.
I can speak more to the avalanche course side of things that I've been teaching last few weeks in both the front range and here in town, and I think they're definitely in talking to the students as well as just observing what's going on. I think there's definitely a increased surge in demand verifying. We've been talking about this, you know, upcoming surge, and the course bookings have been skyrocketing all fall, and it really is coming true. Most of the students are, I would say, millennials, you know, like in the 20 to 40 year old range. And they're all like a very similar demographic. So I think it's quite early, as Zach suggests, but I have been seeing definite increased demand verifying with the avalanche course side of things.
So we're talking with Zach and Ian from the Crested Butte Avalanche Center, and we only actually have about 4 minutes left in the show. We wanted to make sure to talk about an update of the snowpack in the backcountry, as we try to always update our listeners. Predicting avalanche behavior, as I understand it, has a lot to do with examining various layers of the snowpack, looking long term. So we just had this dry spell, followed by, you know, a pretty healthy dump over the weekend. What does that mean for the rest of this season and the snowpack, guys?
Yeah, I can jump in on that one. We, like you hinted at, that dry spell was a real plague for our snowpack. Anytime you have snow sitting around close to the ground with cold, clear weather like we did, you're going to get a rotten snowpack with those sugary facets. And this year was exceptionally weak for a couple of different reasons. One was, it was such a long dry spell that our snowpack was so shallow when we got that dry spell, and the snow surface that we had when that dry spell arrived was a pretty low density, fluffy snow that had fallen without wind. So that kind of three-way pair up made for a really exceptionally weak layer. And then when we got snow this weekend, it wasn't a huge amount of snow, but enough that we saw a widespread avalanche cycle and quite dangerous conditions. We saw, I'm just looking at our numbers here, we saw over 150 avalanches were reported over the weekend. Most of those were natural, and then quite a few human triggered as well. Unfortunately, no incidents. But looking ahead, those layers in some cases may have flushed in some paths. In some areas, that layer is so rotten and sugary that like maybe just the top of it flushed and there's still more to go. And then there's some paths that still are holding onto that weak layer. So we are going to be dealing with this weak layer as we go into the future. And we're calling it a persistent slab problem, which, as the name implies, means we've got a long lasting persistent avalanche concern with this layer. So, Yeah, our forecasts, we put those out every day, and those keep you up to speed on what we're seeing with conditions, and we track how those layers are evolving throughout the winter. And so I don't have a crystal ball to tell you what's going to happen throughout the winter, but I'll tell you that we're going to be dealing with that layer for a little while to come still, that's for sure.